Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 74 for October 29th, 2006. Memories. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Dell. Visit Leo's Picks for some great deals on Dell desktops and laptops at twit.tv/Dell. Hi, this is Leo Laporte. I want to thank everybody for the wonderfully supportive emails and messages and comments on the website. We missed a week last week, and I think I scared some people. I didn't mean to scare you. I was just a little tired and burnt out and having a hard time putting a show together. Well, I'm gone on a cruise right now. I'm off with the Geek Cruises, Mac Mania. But Joe Kelly did a pretty neat thing. He sent me, and this really did cheer me up, an edited version of some of the best moments, in his opinion, from many, many TWiTs. I think he goes back to some of the very earliest TWiTs, before we even were called TWiT. It's about an hour-long show. I hope you'll enjoy these clips, and I hope it'll whet your appetite for future TWiTs to come. You bet they're going to keep coming, and we'll be back with a special TWiT from the cruise itself next Sunday, November 5th, and then we'll be back to our regularly scheduled TWiT November 12th. Thank you for all your support, and enjoy these memories from 73 great TWiTs.
We got a lot of good suggestions for the show name, but one of the ones I liked the best, Patrick, was Sledgecast.
Nice.
Wouldn't that be great? It's a Sledgecast. We are going to unveil on the podcast this week our new name. I'm embarrassed to say that it was none of, as far as I can tell, well, there's two possibilities, but the one that I'm kind of in favor with, nobody submitted, probably because it's so boring. We got so many creative, clever submissions. You want to hear some of the names that people sent in?
Absolutely.
Al Hill said, Saved by the Geeks. That's kind of keeping the screensavers idea. In fact, a number of people did that. Claudio Flores said, WWSSD, what would the screensavers do?
No.
we'll leave that one out. There was also a G4 Eats It's Young, but in deference to G4, we'll leave that one out. Are you now or have you ever been a G4 employee? No. How about this one? I think you'd like this one, Patrick. Those, by the way, were all from Shane. This is from Lance. Return of the Meat Popsicles.
Excellent.
Yeah. Green Megs of Ram. That was from Kevin Davis. I like that one. Kurt Golick said, Good Fellows. But I think maybe Geek Fellows might be good. Geek Fellows. What do you think? No?
That's pretty cool.
Kurt also suggested This Week in Geek, which is the closest to the one we're, I think, going to actually use. What do you think of This Week in Geek?
That's not bad at all.
We could call it Twig. Geek Week. Twig, yeah, T-W-I-G. I like the fact that it rhymes. How about Alex's My Big Fat Video Cast? My Big Fat Tiger
My video. Big Fat Geek Wedding.
Yeah, My Big Fat Geek Cast. Let's see. Attack of the Podcast. There's a lot of them were plays on Attack of the Show, Kevin. Dave said, a hack of the show, which I kind of liked. Well, a 10-year-old named Sonia suggested Reunion of Tech Support Scholars. She wanted to keep the ROTSS acronym. Reunion of Tech Support Scholars. John Wilson, Geek Weekly. The Pocket Protectors, Ray Bromley. That was a good one. Here's one from Dustin that incorporates all of our, you know, kind of reputations. It's the revenge of the dark tipping, sledgehammer swinging, PC modding, lab rat tech guys.
Excellent.
It's a little long.
Winner.
But I like it.
Hey, the domain name's available, I'm
it
sure.
It is. Yeah, I think we could register that. Yeah. Wasn't there a domain name somebody registered that was like because all the other good domain names were taken, something like that.com. All the other good domain names were taken, .com. Joel suggested four guys and a box of crap.
Ouch.
Well, you weren't, Robert wasn't here last week. He doesn't know that that's the grand prize for this, is we're giving Patrick's going to donate a box of crap from his garage.
Hey. Excellent.
That's the grand
prize. This is incredible, vital, vintage computer technology.
Completely random.
Yes, and it will definitely be.
The mystery prize.
I'm kind of embarrassed to admit that I think we're going to go. Robert, you weren't in on this conversation because you were busy finding headsets, but I think we're going to go with the boring This Week in Tech, TWIT. And the only reason is I think the podcast has to say in its name what it is, because otherwise when people look at it in the directory, they'll have no clue. Is that so boring that we should just say no? Oh, thanks for backing me up, guys.
Well,
dead silence.
I think the Skype just faded out again.
Oh, it's a Skype
yeah,
problem.
Same here, Leo. Same here.
Yeah,
same
right.
Here.
You couldn't hear a word I was saying.
Sunspots. Right.
So I've registered twit.tv. We are all twits now. Twit.tv will be the domain. The email address will be thisweekintech@gmail.com. And nobody is a winner, but somebody will get a box of crap, as well as the four runners-up. We're all going to receive web hosting from VisaWeb and Jinx Hackware, thanks to our donations there. Patrick, you saw that Wall Street Journal article about Corey Greenberg. You said you worked with Corey?
I didn't work with him. I used to read his stuff in Stereophile, and a friend of mine, a guy I worked with for a short period of time at Windows Sources, who became a friend of mine, was his editor for a while at a couple different magazines. Somebody was telling me that at least one of our former coworkers is making a fair amount of money.
I know who that former coworker is, actually. I'll tell you why. I saw her at PMA, the photo show. And she looked like she was doing TV, and she's up on a stage and she's doing the thing with the gadgets, and it looked like it was for, so I said, well, what you doing? She said, oh, it's a satellite media tour. And I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, what happens is we feed this to local news stations. I can't remember if it was paying or Panasonic or somebody, and I show them all the products, and it's never identified as being paid for by a company.
It's very lucrative.
Yeah, it's very lucrative. I don't blame her for doing it, but I get offers to do these a lot. I mean, I've had several offers to do these, and I always say no. And this is the thing that bugs me. Just for people who didn't read the article, Wall Street Journal kind of outed a number of tech journalists saying that they're getting paid by the companies they're plugging on these. And then the one they singled out was Corey Greenberg, who's the Today Show's gadget guy, and apparently does. Now, it wasn't clear, and maybe you got a better sense than I did, Patrick. It didn't look like he'd been paid specifically for the Today Show appearances, but that those companies had paid him.
Well, one of the things boy, there's a sentence in here just yearning to breathe free.
Put down the Mickey.
Basically, he maintained that he was never paid to promote products he was discussing on NBC.
Right.
However, he had been, promoted to do the tours by companies who, ironically enough, whose products he was demoing on NBC.
Yeah, so you got to wonder.
And there was no disclosure of that.
That's the big thing. It makes me mad, too, that NBC didn't say anything.
Well, they said in a couple of the follow-up articles I read, they said they've adjusted their policy for this, but they also didn't get rid of the guy who got nailed for it publicly.
We had this problem on Call for Help. Remember Gadget Girl?
Yeah.
Gadget Girl. We found out that her flights were being paid for by one of the companies. And we said, sorry, you can't come back. We're not. So, but the thing that bugs me is I think that people read this and assume that you and I and everybody else are all in the same basket.
Well, I mean, one of my favorite, because I tend not to read the threads because they make me cry. But one of my favorite threads of all time was somebody who's like, man, Leo and Pat are totally owned by Intel because Intel advertises them. And it was on a day where you and I just completely ripped Intel a new delete expletive because, it's like, Intel, it's another processor. It's a little bit faster than the last one. It's a lot more expensive than AMD, so why buy it,
Right.
And it was on the same day. It was like, those guys are so owned by Intel because, Intel pays for their ads. And we didn't even, we're sitting in the studio. We have no idea what commercials are running.
Yeah, we have no idea. idea. I remember ripping. Remember the Pentium 3? They had the that ID encoded into it, so they would know, you know, unique identifier.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, unequivocally on, and this is on Call for Help, don't buy this chip. This is terrible. Intel should be, you know, spanked. Please don't buy a Pentium 3. And immediately, like we'll be right back. And then, dun, 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 Intel presents. And I thought, you know, I didn't know this either. And people sent me a note saying, you're going to get fired, dude. But to the credit of our bosses, we never heard heat from that. I've never taken money for that kind of thing, but I do, and I feel guilty about this. I do have advertisers on the radio show. I mean, they pay me to do their ads. So,
well, you know, are you going to fund it out of your own pocket? You have to feed your children and have a house.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, I kind of feel like radio, it's kind of accepted. I mean, you look at, you know, Paul Harvey is doing ads for Bose, you know, Charles Osgood's right. doing ads. It seems like on radio, it's kind of an old timey medium where, you know, the hosts read the ads, so it's kind of more accepted. I feel bad because I think that it's now difficult for people to tell who's on the up and up and who's not.
Right.
And it makes it hard for me to say things like, gosh, I really love Mac OS X, because then I think people say, well, of course he does. Apple's paying him or something like that, which they're not. Kevin, how do you feel about
Speaking
it?
I don't really see a problem with accepting goods or services as long as you let people know that up front.
You have to tell them.
And you have to tell the people that are giving it to you, because I've accepted free software in the past, but I say, you know, I'm not going to give you a plug for this. I'm not going to rant and rave about it.
Well, that's part of the review process. I mean, we all get stuff in the mail.
Right.
That's different from getting paid tens of thousands of dollars to do fake television news.
Yeah, see, it's not that fake. I mean, how much television news is actually gone, you know, delivered? Once you take out, like, fires and plane crashes and car crashes and covering a court event,
right.
I mean, how much television news actually involves people going out and digging and researching and doing hands-on?
I mean,
there's some good consumer reporters out there, but also a lot of press release rewriting.
No, if you see a drug report on local television news, guarantee you it's produced by the drug company. I mean, inevitably.
Yeah. I got a hot tip for everybody. Seriously hot tip. If you're going to stop the fan on your big, expensive computer so that the whine from the really loud power supply you haven't replaced, even though you have a brand new power supply sitting in the room with you that you haven't installed yet, when you're using that little removable steel tab that, you know, the card slot cover, don't stick it in too far or there'll be a loud pop and the power will stop.
So you're using the card slot to physically stop the fan?
Well, now I'm not, because the power supply's dead.
Dude, you're shooting for a Darwin Award.
Oh, you just catch up on that part of my life.
Part of the fun of working with Patrick is the risk involved. Tomorrow, June 6th, Steve Jobs gets up on the stage at the Worldwide Developer Conference, and if the Wall Street Journal is to be believed, if CNET is to be believed, he will announce that future Macs will not have PowerPC chips in them, but will have instead Intel chips. That, to me, is a huge story. Huge story. You know, frankly, I've been saying this is the end of the world for Apple, that Apple is, you know, this is Apple shooting itself in the foot, committing harakiri. It's Steve Jobs' ultimate act of arrogance. And the first person I thought of to call was John C. Dvorak, another member of the Twit team who hasn't been here because his Skype is still not working. But so I actually used this technology they called a telephone and called John, and I asked him, what he thought about all this.
So you sure make this sound dour. I have just the opposite take that you have on this. I mean, you're making it sound like, first of all, let's go over this. And I did have this written up in 2003, and I expected it to happen last year in 2004 based on what I heard that was going on. It's possible that it took longer to do the middleware part, which is going to be the things that allow some of the software to run on the new platform, much the same way the PowerPC made its transition. Now, take a look at the timing on this, though. We had a 10-year period of the 68,000, then a 10-year period of the PowerPC, and now we're going to have a 10-year Intel period. I don't see that this is such a big deal in terms of the progress that the company's been making. I think this is going to be one of the greatest benefits for Apple that the company's ever could ever imagine.
Well, what do they stand to gain?
Well, But what they stand to gain, first of all, is to, and I've been arguing that they should be doing this, they should have started doing this maybe 10 years ago, which is if they can bring out a standardized Intel platform running this BSD Unix that they have. Oh, I'm sorry, it's OS X. running on a kind of a standardized PC platform, they can also manufacture standard PCs for people who want to maybe still use Windows, even though I think that there actually may be a swing toward OS X for Intel, or which I call a Macintel.
So you think they're going to make a dual boot system that runs both Windows and Apple? Is that the?
I think it's doable, and I think also if I had a choice, and I think I could speak for most PC users, even though you've abandoned the platform, I could say for most PC users. And I've just written this up for PC Magazine. It'll be running tomorrow. I think most of these computers that we have on our desks, the PC users, have all the appeal of a 1977 Plymouth.
I agree with you.
People will spend a few extra dollars to have a good-looking computer. That means Apple can sell against Dell and HP the same machine with a premium price, getting the margins that those other guys will never get, and pretty much decimate the market. I think this is probably the biggest possibly the biggest thing Apple has ever done in terms of potentially becoming a dominant computer.
But what about the Adobes and the Microsofts? How are they going to? Are they going to rewrite their software? What are they going to do?
Well, they've done it before, and in fact, Adobe seems to rewrite its software every 2 years, or every year for that matter. I mean, anyway, I mean they're all constant. This is a recompilation thing anyway. Adobe already has the software running on the x86 system. How difficult can it be?
Oh, it could be very difficult because their Windows version relies on Windows API, which
is
non-existent.
There's a middleware company that Apple's involved with right now, and I have their name somewhere, but this is going to take care of that issue. This is not going to be as big a deal as you make it out to be.
So the middleware company I think you're thinking of is I had the name here. Wait a minute.
Yeah, it's a forgettable name.
It's not a memorable name. Is it Transitive?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, the change from 68,000 to PowerPC, these were very similar chips. They were able to make it possible for the operating system to run both with something called fat binaries. They had the program could run in both modes, and there was a transitional period. It wasn't a very happy period.
Of course, and this won't be either. And in fact, one of the other things that Apple did was bring out that Power Macintosh upgrade card, which they can do again. You know, so people can use the old machines and then put this card in and make a transition slowly. My argument is this, is that Apple, this is the time for Apple to do it. They can suffer through a transition like this, which, yeah, I agree with that part. It's not going to be easy. But with the iPod, iTunes thing making tons of money for them, this is the time to make this move because this long-term is a fantastic idea.
Well, I think it's gutsy. I think we're going to look at tomorrow as the day Apple committed suicide. And here's why I think the exact opposite, John. First of all, they're on a platform that is far from moribund. I think that the Cell chip, which is a PowerPC-based chip, is a very exciting future chip. I think the Intel platform, on the other hand, has run out of steam. I think they're moving to a processor platform that is seeing the end of its line.
Well, there's a couple things there. One is that, you know, apparently the story has it that Steve was, like, stiffed by IBM concerning the Cell chip and kind of put
that
in second place.
That, I believe. I can see this being an arrogant move on Steve's part, an ego move, but I think it's going to be suicide.
I again, disagree. The other thing is about the Cell chip. Both Jobs has been poo-pooing it as lousy. And the other guy who, of course, doing both of this is, you know, these are questionable sources for criticism. I mean, Steve says this chip is no good, and then also Bill Gates has, you know, again, you know, I agree that this doesn't, you know, this is coming from a guy who's got a competitive product.
Right.
But at the same time, Gates is complaining about this chip. And some of the people within Intel have some issues with this chip.
So you think
with
IBM...
The new multi-threaded, multi-core Intel chips are nothing to be sneezed at.
No, I agree. The new Pentium D and the hyper-threading and then dual cores, they're trying to keep this chip's family alive, but it's not a long-term solution. You think the G5 is the end of the line for PowerPC from IBM?
Well, I mean, they probably will continue to upgrade the chip for their own internal uses, but...
What about the notion of Intel maybe doing something new for Apple? You think that's credible?
No.
It's going to be an Intel x86 chip.
It has to be. I mean, if they did something like what you just described, which nobody said, I mean, that's purely... just off the wall.
Highly speculative, yeah.
Yeah, it's totally. I mean, there's no evidence of this. I mean, it's. I mean, you know, long. You know, of course, you never know. But, but we would have known about something. I mean, when my original thesis, when I first stumbled onto the meetings, I had, you know, thought what might happen that would be interesting, and I thought it would be kind of interesting if Apple went to the Itanium, because they could use it for. They could use it for the servers, right. And it would be different, and Intel's begging for people to buy the thing.
Well, that at least has a future. The x86 under Intel is end-of-line product.
Well, I mean, I'm not in agreement with that, because, I mean, I know where you're coming from saying that, but in fact, you know, with the legacy out there and the fact that this chip is just getting faster and faster with the multi-cores, and I expect
But Intel says no 4 gigahertz.
No, nobody wants to do 4 gigahertz. They'd rather do more cores. I mean, you can get double the performance by doubling the number of cores on the same die because things are shrinking so much.
I have two cores in my G5 right now. I have two processors.
Well, you're ahead of me.
But most people do. We're talking to John C. Dvorak, columnist for PC Magazine, and certainly a guy who, if anybody knows what's going on. So you believe this CNET report. You think this will happen tomorrow?
Yeah, I do. And the Wall Street Journal is also kind of... you know, saying it's a done deal. I mean, and there's a blogger out there, which I link to in my blog, if you go to Dvorak.org/blog, who made this observation that he found a language observation. He looked at the articles and noticed that they weren't, neither CNET nor the Wall Street Journal were had any weasel words in their stories.
They seem adamant, yeah.
You know, I mean, it was like, you know, this is, we got this on good authority. And the newspapers nowadays are so gun-shy about not weaseling out of, you know, some of these assertions that when they don't have them in there, that's actually a signal. So,
well, especially with Steve Jobs. You don't want to be a rumor monger with Steve Jobs. So
yeah, well,
you have to wonder if somebody from Apple is actually feeding this story to the Journal and to CNET.
Well, you know, he's done that before because he's... you know, seeing it looks like it's picking the story up from the Journal, but, you know, Jobs plays favorites with the high-end media, and most of the people are irked with him about it because he'll, you know, put everybody on an embargo to a certain date and then give the story to Newsweek so they can run it right. The day before.
Or Mossberg.
Yeah, Mossberg's a big he's like a kind of a stooge for Apple.
And he's at the Journal, and I could easily see them feeding this to Mossberg and him feeding it upstairs.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. Excellent.
Well, it scares the heck out of me. It doesn't seem like it's necessary. I think Apple's in a good position right now. It is a very gutsy move. I mean, your scenario is attractive. If they could start shipping computers that would run both Windows and OS X, I think there's a big market for that.
I think it's a huge market for it, and I think the other upside for Apple would be that they'd get – one of the problems they're always going to have with only selling 1 million computers a quarter compared to the 100 to 175 million machines that are sold every year. This is a ridiculously low number, is that you can't get the developer interest that you can to a market that has 100 million.
So you think that's the carrot they're going to offer these guys for rewriting all of their software. Do you think Microsoft's going to play along? Office is critical.
I think Microsoft, no, I don't think it's as critical as you think it is anymore. I think, and besides that, if you bring out a dual boot machine, who cares? But the point is that, you know, I think Apple's been trying to get out from underneath Mike. I mean, that's where they've been bringing out products that kind of compete with Microsoft products.
That's true.
And ever since Microsoft or Macintosh Basic, the product that was killed by Microsoft, the people in the Mac community would love to just ditch Microsoft and go off and do their own thing. And, you know, and there's a lot of good stuff out there that runs on Unix machines. Yeah. I mean, some of it has crappy menuing systems, unfortunately, because the Unix guys, they think weird. But, you know, except for that picadillo, I think most of this stuff, I think you can outfit a OS X machine with no Microsoft material on it at all and do very well for yourself.
Would you get in line to buy one of these machines?
Asking me about buying stuff is funny.
I know you don't have to, but if for some reason you didn't get one, would you?
This is the kind of machine that if I was like a computer buyer,
yeah,
which I'm not. I'm a writer about computers. I don't go out, you know, I just basically testing stuff all the time, so I don't worry about buying stuff. But if I was a computer buyer and I had the lineup of different machines out there, and Apple, which has already developed its name as a kind of a, like I mentioned in the column tomorrow, kind of the Lexus compared to the Fords and Chevys of mm-hmm. Dell and HP, I think I would buy the Lexus. I have a Lexus. I would buy a Lexus computer. I mean, something that's a little nicer. It's maybe, you might think it's better made. It probably is the same company in China making them all, but definitely a better looking machine with a lot of cachet. I would get the Macintosh in a minute.
All right. Well, there you have it. John, thank you on such short notice for coming on the show.
Anytime, Leo. You know me.
So there you have it. John C. Dvorak. He says it's a done deal, and it's a great idea. You heard me. I just don't buy it.
Why do you think it's a bad deal, Leo?
I'll give you the three reasons. All right? Reason number one, all your software has to be rewritten, and it is non-trivial. I know everybody's going crazy saying, oh, no, the drivers are already there. Believe me, just because Adobe makes a Windows version of Photoshop and a PowerPC version of Photoshop doesn't mean it's easy at all to make a Intel X version of Photoshop. That's just a whole new kettle of fish. And no matter what, you don't just recompile. You rewrite, and it's a lot of work. And, they went through this 10 years ago. I don't know if they're going to go through it again. The only thing that might convince them is maybe there's a giant market, so maybe we will. Secondly, why x86? Why not Athlon? Why not Opteron? Why saddle yourself with a company that's at the end of the line? It's just, this doesn't make any sense.
Hey, Roger?
No, I was just wondering, did you mean end of the line for Intel or just for the x86 family?
Well, end of the line for x86. I mean, you've got to make a decision. Are you going Itanium or are you going, you think it'll be an Itanium? By the way, let me introduce Roger Chang, who's somehow taken the place of David Prager. I don't know how it happened, but it's magic. Roger is writing about games for GameSpot over at CNET. And by the way, Roger, maybe you have some insight. How did CNET get this story?
Well, actually, I work for GameSpot, and the way CNET actually separates its division, they keep it pretty much behind closed doors.
Right. Let's go back. So anyway, those are two points, and I'm sure there's a third, but address those, if you will, gentlemen. Do you think it's a good idea, Patrick?
I just think in terms of the sheer volume of the chips and the fact that they've got to be able to get the chips cheaper. They've got to have access to better chipsets. It just seems like from Dvorak had a really good point. I mean, if they're tapping into an architecture that's going out to 125, 175 million PCs a year, it's a lot easier to get deals.
So you're thinking they had to for economic reasons?
I think they probably had to for economic reasons, and it's probably getting really difficult to compete. There's still, the reason Intel always held on to the megahertz numbers on the processors is because the marketing people always said if people went in and they go for the biggest number of megahertz, even if the performance is unrelated. That's why Cyrix did branding that sort of upsold their, from their clock speed up to what their actual performance was. AMD's done that.
You think Microsoft's going to rewrite Microsoft Office and this is exactly the moment Microsoft's been waiting for to dump Apple.
Well, how important is Microsoft Office?
It's the number one selling application on Macintosh.
What percentage? What percentage of the users actually use it?
Well, you have to have it if you want to live in a Windows world and you want to use a Mac.
I use OpenOffice.
Well,
I use OpenOffice. I don't live on Microsoft Office.
You can use OpenOffice on Mac, but you have to run XWindow. Here's the third reason. I think it's a very compelling reason. It's the Osborne effect. They're announcing now that in 6 months the Mini will be based on Intel, and in 18 months, all of their products based on Intel, they're not going to sell one more Mac for 18 months. That's it. Who would buy a Mac now knowing you're going Intel and every bit of software you buy is obsolete?
Yeah,
this is a stupid move, I'm telling you. We're going to look back at this and say this is when Steve Jobs fell on his sword.
Nah, I don't know about that.
All right, Kevin, you explain it to me.
This is so exciting. I'm stoked. I mean, I have two Macs. I have three PCs. And the only reason I don't just have one computer is because I want OS X, and I also want to be able to play my games.
I do like a dual boot. I do like, and Dvorak brought that up, a dual boot PC Mac is attractive.
But that's a total fantasy.
You don't think that'll happen?
It can happen if it's based on Intel chips. And the other thing is you don't have to dual boot at all. They can run a nice little emulator that runs inside
that's
OS
a good point.
X.
That's
that
a good
will
point.
Be native on the x86-based processor, so you really won't see the slowdown that you would if you're running it in like a processor emulation type mode.
You could do. You're exactly right. You don't have to do a dual boot. You could just have
dual
boot.
I'll buy emulatable or hackable, but I don't see Steve ever signing off on doing a dual boot. you know, Macintosh system.
Why are you so stoked about this then, Kevin? What? Let's say you can only buy a Mac Intel. Is it the dual boot that gets you excited?
Well, the main thing that gets me excited is that I've always been a huge fan of Apple hardware. I mean, the way they design things, the computer, if you take apart a G5, open it up, play
beautiful.
With it,
upgrade it. Beautiful inside.
Everything is laid out so clean and so well. And the power supply, every piece of that computer is just so well engineered. It blew me away. And I would love to have, I would pay a few extra $100 for a nice Apple that could run my, you know, not only my Mac applications, but my Windows as well.
Robert Herron, what do you think?
I see this maybe as a first stage for Apple in terms of creating competition for Microsoft in the operating systems suite down the road. If their software suddenly is x86 compatible, then what's to keep them from, you know, maybe making a better operating system for and possibly throw more competition to Windows?
See, that's a great question, Robert, because are they going to release OS X as a standalone product
Never.
That you can install
Never.
On any x86? You don't think so?
Apple's a hardware company.
It's true. You're right.
They are not a software company.
Well, you know,
it's also there's a nightmare in terms of legacy coverage for hardware on the Windows side. They've never had to address on the.
Then
on
all
the
of
Mac
a sudden,
side.
They would have to address that. You're right. I mean, they own the hardware. They don't have to worry about it. They know exactly
what
they're running.
What you do at that point is you do like what BOS did, and that is when you start to release it, you only select, you know, here's 15 motherboards that we're compatible with. Here's 10 different chipsets. Here's 10 different video cards. Very limited hardware support.
So like the greatest. Like an OS X certified motherboard, OS X certified video card. I mean, you know, it's interesting because Apple has a lot of the content creation software. I mean, they have Shake, they have a few other 3D rendering.
Motion,
as well as,
Live,
oh, they
Final
rule
Cut.
The video space.
So, I mean, it would be feasible that, you know, Steve could be thinking that, you know, there's so many people kind of already invested in that software and that technology and that kind of learning that they had to do for it, that they'll want to switch over, you know, down the road when they require more powerful hardware and they acquire, you know, updated software to run it. It's like, we granted it's running on the architecture, but from their point of view, it should still feel and look like an OS X Macintosh.
I could see this if, you know, PowerPC was dead, if IBM wasn't innovating, if it were kind of a moribund, you know, processor family, I can see making the move. But IBM is an innovator. They're the first to use copper. They're doing this cell chip. I know Steve Jobs poo-poos the cell chip, but I think it's going to be
what's the software transition? You know what I mean? It's like, what's worse, the software transition from the G5 to the cell processor, or the software transition from the G5 to
Intel?
The Intel
easily.
Format?
The cell processor has a PowerPC controller chip. Now, I'm speculating, but because it's a PowerPC controller chip, it's PowerPC family, I think it's going to be an easier transition, a much easier transition. Look what happened. Microsoft has gone to PowerPC for Xbox. PlayStation has gone to Cell for the PlayStation 3. Apple is going upstream. They're going the wrong direction.
Yeah, but those are also relatively closed platforms, and they're primarily looking at gaming performance.
But they're going to sell millions, and gaming performance is very similar to 3D rendering, to MP3 conversion, to digital video. It's the stuff we do. I think they're going against the trend in processors right now.
They may be bucking the trend in processors, but I think what they're really going after here is they've realized that people won't switch unless they have that, you know, certain application or that certain game that can run on their Mac. And the true way to do this, the best way to do it, would be to run native x86 based, where you wouldn't have to have a crazy emulator. It could just run right inside of OS X.
But remember that most of these games are written to a Windows API, to a DirectX API. They're more tied to Windows than they are tied to Intel. You have to run Windows.
Right. You would have to have the kernel running with inside there. But there's just like the way Virtual PC operates right now, how you can launch a Windows-based application directly from the taskbar. It would be the same thing, but without the emulation.
So what is Microsoft's take on this? Is this good for Microsoft or bad for Microsoft? Does Bill Gates support this? Because if Bill Gates says there's no way they're going to be able to run Windows on this thing, they're not going to run Windows on it. And do you think Bill Gates is going to say that? Or is he going to say, oh, good, another chance to make some money? I don't think
so. Well, why would he say there's no way, though? I mean,
because it's a huge threat. First of all, it's a threat. If this works, it's a threat to Windows. And he doesn't. I think inherently he doesn't like this whole idea. It's Apple saying, "Hey, we're going to move over to your side."
Oh, I think he hates the idea. But the thing is that he can't stop it. If it's x86 based, anyone can put Windows on there as long as Apple allows it. I know Apple could stop it if they wanted to.
Yeah, and I just think that if normal users are going to do it, it has to be with the cooperation of Microsoft. Because they own the emulator soft PC.
It's interesting.
Would you buy one, Leo?
Oh, of course. I'd buy a dual boot Windows Mac machine. I guess I would. I mean, you know, most of us, all of us live in a dual processor world. We have Windows and Macs. And that's a satisfactory solution for me right now. I do most of my work on Macs, but, you know, this tablet PC is great. I mean, I'm using it for, as a date book. $2,000 daytimer.
Very expensive datebook.
It is, but it's great.
Big, breakable, and it won't fit in your pocket. And by the way, it'll last a half a day.
It's almost as small as my daytimer.
You know,
it only costs 10 times more.
You know, it's interesting. I noticed that somebody was commenting on one of the issues Apple had with the Cell processor was that there was no VMX Altavec, or there wasn't a sophisticated
need it.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole machine is an Altavec machine. It's SIMD in hardware. I mean,
yeah, but they'd have to redo all of the code that was made for Altavec.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true. Well, they're going to redo code no matter what now. Mm. I mean, look, there's no question you've got OS X in the lab running on Intel. I mean, they've had that all along.
Yeah, Markiplier project is what they call it.
Yeah, I mean, that's easy. I'm not worried about the operating system. I'm not worried about drivers. I'm just application developers. You know who you're going to leave behind? Maybe you won't leave Macromedia behind or Adobe behind, although none of these companies have much love for Apple anymore.
It would be interesting to know just what percentage of either, especially Macromedia or Adobe, what percentage of their sales are still to the Macintosh platform.
It's telling that Steve's making this announcement at the developers conference. Clearly, right. The announcement is he's going to have to really kiss some butt over there and tell the ISVs, the software vendors, we love you. We're going to support you. You've got to develop for this. He went through this in 1994 when they went from to PowerPC. This is even worse. Now, maybe it's easier in some respects because they know Intel. But, nowadays you don't write to the processor. You write to the operating system. You write to the API.
And so do you think the key here is going to be a suite that he announces saying, hey, this is the one suite where you'll be able to develop your application and then easily port it to Windows if you want to, selling them on that?
He has to do something. You know what, Kevin? You hit the nail on the head. I hadn't thought of that, but that's exactly what he has to do. He has to say, we have tools that will develop. You write once, it runs on both. You're exactly right, Kevin. That's what he has to do. They may be able to do that. Then now that's compelling.
So will I be able to get a G5 in like a shuttle case in like 3 years?
I don't think anybody will be getting a G5 in 3 years if this keeps up. You'll have to get an Xbox. All right. I think we've done this to death. Let's just go around the horn and cast a thumbs up or thumbs down. Good for Apple, bad for Apple. Kevin Rose?
Thumbs up.
Robert Herron?
I'd say thumbs down for the hardware side.
Roger Chang?
I would say thumbs up for software and thumbs down for the hardware.
Oh, you little weasel. Patrick Norton?
Hey, if it makes for a cheaper Mac, great. But I still don't believe it's going to happen.
I believe it's going to happen, and I think it's going to be the end of the line for Apple. I'm very disappointed. I hope you're enjoying this best of edition of TWiT, brought to you by Joe Kelly. I know I am. In just a moment, perhaps the most famous moment in TWiT history. Before we do that, I do want to remind you that TWiT is made possible by the good folks at Dell, who are providing their financial support for this podcast and the entire TWiT network. We encourage you, if it's time to get a new computer, maybe you're thinking about a Vista PC, visit Dell. We've got some great picks on our webpage. Just go to twit.tv/Dell. Take a look at Leo's picks. And then, even if you don't want to buy Leo's picks, click the links there, because there are some other, of course, many more great Dell deals available. And every time you go through our page to get to Dell, we get credit. So your support and Dell support is much appreciated. Again, twit.tv/Dell. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it wouldn't be a best of without this moment featuring John C. Dvorak and Steve Gibson.
We're going to toss it to John because John's a little upset about Steve Gibson's spam filtering solution. I hate to use the word solution because it's like the total evil marketing phrase.
But I think it works.
I like saying solution once in a while just because it feels so naughty. But John, you're a little upset about Steve's email management system. Steve, what would you call it? Your filtering tool?
I'm not sure what we're talking about.
Okay, so he wouldn't know because he doesn't get this mail.
So
let me explain what he's got here. Steve is. Let me go. In fact, let me get the message up here. If I,
oh, wait a minute. You're talking about the fact that we don't allow HTML here.
Yeah, listen to this. Yes. So there's a message going around. Everyone out there should know this, kind of the inside baseball here when it comes to this show. Everybody sends a memo out on Saturday and Sunday, goes all over the place. Check this link out. We're going to talk about this, that, and the other thing.
As if we plan this show.
Well, you know, there's actually a better plan than what Leo used to do. Anyway, so. So you send the thing out, reply to all, and then you get this message back because Gibson's email, being the Mickey Mouse system that it is, instead of actually doing some real work or getting a spam filter, you get this message back that says, your HTML email was refused by our server. Hello, your email to grc.com was not delivered because it contains, quote, HTML formatting. HTML stands for Hypertext Markup Language. It is the language used by the web pages on the World Wide Web. Since nearly all unsolicited commercial email spam uses HTML. This is bull, by the way. To create the. What about those Nigerian letters? I've never seen one of those in HTML.
Okay, so
it goes on and on and on. So I sent it back to him, be saying, hey, "What is this BS?" And I get it back again because apparently there was a link in there. So I, you know, this is, you know, this is to me is just basically an insult to anyone trying to send Steve email.
I don't know. My email goes through fine.
That's because, but once Steve approves you, because once
no, I don't send HTML mail. I agree with him.
Well, I know, but you can send Steve HTML if he approves
you.
Hey,
HTML mail is not going away.
I'd be happy to whitelist you, John.
There is no way that HTML mail is disappearing.
We'll just put some grease on your email and it slides right in.
What's wrong with Steve? What's wrong with HTML email?
Oh, they hide tons of garbage inside of it.
Well, I mean, it really is the case that we're phenomenally buried by email unless we do that. And we've tried it as an experiment to remove the HTML filter, and it's just it's a phenomenal difference.
I think it's a clever way.
Mark Burkell over at Computer Time over here in the peninsula has a bunch of highly elaborate email filters.
I mean, I would think you
I get no spam at all.
who would say, hey, you know, email should just be text.
Now, wait a minute. John, do you get no spam because you have a minion of evil helpers that sort through your mail for you so it all shows up without the spam? Or do actually not get any spam?
It's GRC automated security.
I do not get any spam.
How do you do that?
Yeah, John, tell us.
It's impossible.
How do you do that, John?
I don't do it.
Who does it?
Mark Burkell. He's like a genius. He runs this little service called Computer Time, which is he's the guy. I've known this guy for 25 years. He started off being like a netware guy and had a thing called Mark's Menu back in the 80s.
Is this something we can use?
Yeah, we could.
How could we use this?
You just have to go through his system with your mail, and get cleared right out.
Does he offer this as a commercial service, or do you have to be a friend of his?
Is it softwaretime.com? Is that his website?
It's www.ctyme.com.
All right. I use something similar. I use server-side email spam protection from MailRoute, which does work very well. CloudMark, same thing, works very well. Brightmail.
This actually works better than Brightmail. But, I mean, he actually has my server. I mean, he does the whole thing for me. But he can do just the email part of it. And I get no spam.
None?
None.
I still get 10 or 15 a day.
I'll get one thing will sneak in a week. Well, you know, and then you send it back to Mark and you'll never see it again. It's unbelievable.
So what's the URL?
CTYME.com.
Right.
But we can't get there, but because it's blocking you, Patrick. You're using HTML.
Well, it's computer type. Okay, so this.
Now, why do you say HTML mail is not going away? I mean, it is a blight. The mail is bloated. It hides stuff. It's ugly. You don't think IncrediMail is a good thing, surely?
Actually, you know what? So this guy's...
Gmail is HTML-based.
Huh?
Google's email service is HTML-based.
Yeah, but you can turn it off.
That's true. But, I mean, by default,
all web mail is
going
to...
It's not going away because the general public doesn't know what the hell anybody... What Steve Gibson's talking about when it comes to this, like, refusal to... In fact, I think most people, if they were writing to Steve and they got that memo, they'd go, I don't know what he's talking about.
Well, and that's why he explains it so clearly.
He explains it, and it doesn't help.
I talk about it all the time. I've been saying on the radio show for 2 years, don't use HTML mail.
Well, John,
I don't know if
John,
it's sinking in.
Not going away.
John, you're now whitelisted, so you can send me any crap that you want to, and it'll come right in.
From now on, you're getting spam.
By the way,
all from Dvorak.org.
So Computer Time is your web host, John, and they're using Spam Assassin to filter your
email. Oh, he's a Spam Assassin.
No, Spam Assassin is only one of the many mechanisms he uses.
Okay, well, according to his website, he's using Spam Assassin and XM Rules.
Spam Assassin is very good. I think Spam Assassin is
amazing.
Excellent. And many people have it. They don't know it. Their internet service provider would turn it on if they asked.
So in your case, John, go ahead.
We also know many instances where Spam Assassin false positives and, like, blocks people who have...
Well, here's what I do with Spam Assassin. First of all, turn off all real-time black holes.
And we should point out that Spam Assassin runs on your email server.
Yeah.
These are all server-side issues.
So turn off the black hole stuff because you're right. Maps and orbs will have lots of false positives. So I turn that off. The second thing you do is you set the setting fairly high. You set it to 8, or the default is 6.5, I think, or 6. You set it to 8. And that way, only the really most egregious stuff gets stopped. But that's 80% of
all
stuff.
Okay, well, let me tell you what the another thing that he does, which is not mentioned there. He uses a 3-stage filtering system, and maybe spam it. Seriously.
You sound like you're advertising vodka, John.
Does it have the Micronite filter? Because I thought that was really good. That's what made Kent so smooth.
You know what? If you guys don't want to hear about it, it's fine with me. I get no spam.
3-stage filter, John.
3-stage filter.
My web-based email does me just fine.
Okay, tell us about the 3-stage filter.
You know what? I'm not talking about it anymore. I've already given enough publicity for this. People out there, just go check it out. Seedtime.com. Good man.
Big story of the week, and it's just making me hopping mad. We covered it on Security Now with Steve Gibson in detail. I actually did an early Security Now because it was such a big story. It first came to light last month, but nobody paid much attention to it. The F-Secure people said, Sony is putting a rootkit on Windows systems when you run Sony BMG audio CDs. Hey, nobody paid any attention until the fellow from SysInternals, who makes a rootkit revealer program called Rootkit Revealer, mentioned it in his blog, and the world came tumbling down. That was earlier this week. So here's the deal. If you have a Sony BMG disc, they've been doing this since last spring, that says content enhanced and protected copy.
How many titles or how many albums released?
You know, it's not clear. Nobody's ever said. Sony's not saying.
I stopped buying CDs 2 years ago.
But if you look at it, you'll know because the CD will say content enhanced. Mm-hmm. If you play it on a Windows machine, you'll get a EULA. You'll get a license agreement that pops up and says, is it okay to install some software? It misdescribes the software, including it implies that you can remove it easily or disable it easily. And so most people are just saying, yeah, okay, I just want to listen to my music. What it's installing is effectively a rootkit, which a rootkit, of course, is a hacker tool that hides, allows software to hide on your computer, files to hide on your computer. Hide so well because by patching the kernel that no program, not even the operating system, can see these files. They're just invisible. In fact, the way that SysInternals rootkit revealer does it is by actually writing its own operating system code and comparing what it gets with a directory listing to what the operating system's saying. And if there's a discrepancy, if Rootkit Revealer is finding files that the operating system doesn't know about, it says you've got a rootkit.
But you don't need to. You can install that after the fact. You don't need to immunize.
The SysInternals Rootkit Revealer is great. There's also one called Blacklight from F-Secure. They basically both work the same way. But Mark Rasinovich, who's at SysInternals, was the guy on Monday who said, there's this Sony rootkit on here.
So wait, is this because Sony decided to license protection, like some kind of DRM?
From a British company.
Were they naive in like the company that made this DRM technology? No, but the company that made the DRM technology... decide, hey, let's put this on here and make it really sloppily. And
possibly.
Sony just said, okay, this is probably good stuff. We'll put it on.
You've got two basic options. Either Sony went, wow, this looks like an incredibly, you know, robust system for protecting our content and preserving our revenue stream. Or Sony knew exactly what it was doing and was like, yeah.
I choose the latter.
I as someone who used to work for Sony a long time ago.
Evil! Yes. You are evil!
I left.
Okay.
Over a decade ago.
Before the BMG thing.
Before the BMG thing. But I wasn't there. I wasn't part of the decision maker. But I would actually suggest that they may not have, there's a lot of decisions that they make that some executive.
Nobody sat down with the executive and said, we're going to use a rootkit.
And the executive.
No. Yeah, it's like.
The executive doesn't know how to check his email. No.
Great. What's a rootkit?
Yeah.
All they said to the executive is, no, don't worry. No one will know it's there. No one will be able to see it. It hides itself. In fact, it was possible to remove it, and they patched it just a few months ago to prevent removal. And so what I think Sony is culpable for is that much. Is somebody said to them, oh, yeah, you can't uninstall it. And they said, whoa, we don't want that to happen. Now, this thing is so badly written that it scans your disk like 8 times a minute. It double scans it. But worse, and I think the real serious thing is, it means that any file that begins with $SYS, any file, will disappear, is immediately rootkitted. So in fact, Mark Rusinovich, who discovered this, took notepad.exe and renamed it to $sys$notepad.exe, and it disappeared.
A quote-unquote third-party hacker could just take advantage of knowing that they could hide stuff
like that?
Funny
you should mention that, because there's a World of Warcraft hack that's been built around the rootkit.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. So somebody's got a hack that they put on your system?
No, not on our system.
It's used to cheat in the game.
Yeah, and they use that to hide
it,
essentially.
And
any idiot 12-year-old who knows enough to rename a file $sys$ can, in fact, put anything they want on your system.
Yeah.
Sony can say, well, look, there's rootkit technology used in Kaspersky Antivirus and Norton, the Trash Protect. Right. They could say, look, this is legitimate. Other companies use this. But what they can't say is what's really a problem is that they're opening this huge security hole on every Windows system it's installed on. Now, here's the latest that just came out today from Mark Rusinovich. As we tape this, it came out on a Friday. He said it's also phoning home. Every time you play a Sony disc, it's calling Sony and saying what songs you're listening to.
See, there's marketing people at Sony going, hey, this is, we're trying to figure out how many people are actually listening to our audio on computers. Isn't this great,
I think there's like this weird mismatch because Sony started out as a hardware company and then they decided to get into the content business. So they're kind of
I think my impression is that they got into the content business because they lost on the hardware business because they didn't have the right
content.
They got Betamaxed once, and they were like, we're going to be self-sufficient. And that's the same way that Apple, had trouble, and now they have lots of their own software. It's the same approach in certain ways.
Really, if they knew what they were talking about, they would be even more culpable because this thing is so badly written, it's so appalling. For instance, if you pull it out, if you manage to uninstall it, it breaks your CD. Yeah. You can no longer see your CD driver because it's patched.
This is another good reason not to buy any more CDs.
No more Sony CDs. Certainly,
not for you. No, but your CD tray opens all the time. Just randomly.
It's going that way anyway. Yeah.
Going to the Apple Store is not the best option because the audio quality isn't as high as it could or should be.
It isn't.
Well, I would certainly say stop playing CDs on your computer. In fact, don't play DVDs on your computer too, because there's a similar thing happens with this interactual player.
There's a much better lesson here. Buy a Mac.
That's a good question. We don't know because there's no rootkit revealer for the Mac.
I don't think it's actually possible.
Well, if you buy music from Sony that has this,
it's possible on any system. In fact, the original rootkits were designed for Unix systems. It is absolutely possible. All it is backpatching the kernel.
I still have to ask you because Apple, every time it goes into that, Apple's going to keep on asking you, are you sure you want to do this? And do you have to?
But once you've patched the kernel, all bets are off. It doesn't matter. Because they can patch the kernel to stop asking you. They can do anything they want.
But if you take any of these disks and just pop it in your system and have say, iTunes, rip it, you're fine.
Well, wasn't the whole purpose of this to hide the CD?
This is to keep it from being ripped.
Yeah.
I don't know if this works on these.
Fair
but in the
use
past,
does not extend to CDs. It's not a digital. It's an analog thing.
And by the way, they're trying to plug the analog.
We're going to get to that in a little bit too. That's a huge story. This is a bad week for civil libertarians.
It's a bad week for American citizens.
I agree.
Whether they respect their rights or not.
I agree. So in the past, remember holding down the shift key would prevent this software from running because it prevents auto run. So if you want to listen to a contact content-enhanced CD, hold the shift key down. But I still wouldn't put it on my computer.
Right.
And I presume if you say no to the EULA, the license agreement, nothing will happen.
We can only hope.
But it's just
appalling. They'll probably just spit your CD back out.
There is a patch. Sony, the company that wrote this, XPCO Aurora, is offering a service pack one. For the
because they found a better way to hide it. we'll take that one out.
I don't trust them, but that's say it makes it so that you can remove it. It's 3.5 megabytes. It's a huge download.
Service pack for a rootkit?
Yeah, a service pack.
That just sounds dangerous. That's all I'm saying. Wrong.
We'll put links to Mark Rusinovich's blog postings because those are really the most complete. And I urge people also to listen to Security Now because Steve and I talked about it quite a bit.
Somebody also went to a record store with a list of the name of the CDs that had this on them and was like, I understand there's supposed to be a EULA I can read according to Sony's websites, which there is. And then the people in the store are like, huh? You know what I mean? It's not printed on the label.
So I hope there's serious repercussions for Sony for this because this is just bad corporate behavior.
I'm not picking the PS3.
John was playing for us, and you might want to play a little bit of this Ted Stevens, who is from Alaska, although I was confused earlier. Is he the chairman of the telecommunications committee?
Indeed.
And the guy who is spearheading the new telecommunications bill this week, the Senate voted. Well, actually, they didn't vote to eliminate the net neutrality provisions. They just didn't vote to include it. It was a tie vote.
Yeah, 11-11.
Committee couldn't agree, so it needs to be a majority to put it in. So the net neutrality provision is gone. And we have, I think, this fascinating explanation of net neutrality from Senator Stevens.
What the senator is talking about is allowing all of these entities that support this to provide streaming stuff going on the internet. Now, the internet, you know, let's go back. Internet started with a concept of local-to-local connections across the country. You could go for Air Alaska, but you had to go through local connections to get there. Industry wisely provided for streaming for, in effect, a new kind of long distance, and that's what we've got. We've got a service that's immune to distance, and it's there for the consumer. But when we take indicate that anyone that wants to use this system for massive commercial purposes. There's one company now. You can get sign up and you can get a movie delivered to your house daily by subscription by delivery service. Okay, and currently it comes to your house. It put in a mailbox when you get home, annually or monthly, you change your order. But you pay for that, right? This service is now going to go through the internet, and what you do is you just go to a place on the internet, and you order your movie, and guess what? You can order 10 of them, and it's delivered to you, and this delivery charge is free, right? 10 movies streaming across that internet. And what happens to your own personal internet? I just the other day got internet was sent by my staff at 10 o'clock in the morning on Friday. I got it yesterday. Why? Because it got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the internet commercially. And here we have this one situation where enormous entities want to use the internet for their purpose to save money for doing what they're doing now. They use FedEx. They use the delivery services. They use the mail. They deliver in other ways, but they want to deliver vast amounts of information over the internet. And again, the internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. And if you don't understand, those tubes can be filled. And if they're filled, when you put your message in, it gets in line. It's going to be delayed by anyone that puts into that tube enormous amounts of material.
This reminds me of that old April Fool's gag I did some years ago where I said these guys were trying to pass a law saying you can't be drunk when you're using a modem. Drunk driving on the information superhighway.
You know, I could actually see these guys doing it. And now, look, Stevens is one of the three oldest senators. He obviously didn't grow up with the internet. He didn't even grow old with the internet. I mean, the internet is.
He doesn't use the internet, period.
He doesn't even use it. So.
He's the guy who was trying to sneak the broadcast flag into the neutrality bill.
Exactly.
He's a weenie.
Exactly. You did blog this week about Kevin's cover, and we might as well just start off with that. I'm first of all, Kevin, embarrassed or not, I think it's wonderful. I mean, you're getting a lot of recognition from Business Week. It was kind of the accounting in the article is a little strange, as they pointed out in the article. Your dig is breaking even, but on the front page they say this kid made $60 million in 18 months.
Actually, a dig isn't even breaking even, so they got that wrong.
Wait, hey, Kevin, you're taking us out to dinner tonight with all that money?
$60 million.
I'm not a multimillionaire. I'm not even a millionaire or a thousandaire. I don't know how they came up with that cover, but I guess it was just based on they put a value to the company, and then $200 million.
And you have 40%.
They estimated how much. Yeah, it's all estimates, and obviously it's just paper fake money. So
hey, I thought, well, Leo, you kind of liked that piece. I thought the article read like a slipshod hit piece.
Really? You think it was a hit piece?
It would seem like it to me. It was snide. He called him a kid. I mean, the guy, you know, Kevin's 30 or close to it. And, I mean, if you look on the picture, he's got a 6 o'clock shadow, for God's sake. I mean, he doesn't even look like he's young in that thing, except for the crazy outfit.
And they called him
had all these
Tom Cruise's doughier little brother. And, yeah, they were some
snotty
stuff.
Yeah, and that
about
the tech TV loser, you know, kind of a loser on tech TV, you know, unknown. I mean, the whole thing just rang. It was, I
you know
was
what?
30.
You're right. I'm mad as hell now. I'm mad. Dang it.
No, it was pretty crazy how they came up with that cover shot. So the whole deal was going into this. Honestly, it was just an interview for we were going to be one of the companies featured in the article. We had no idea it was going to be a cover or anything like that until the actual day that it went out to press. So,
oh, they didn't even warn you before that?
No, they said there's a possibility it might be, but they go, we want to take a photo of you, you know, come out and you know, it's for the inside of the magazine. Just, you know, there's guys walking their dogs. There's guys with hockey gear on. You know, do something fun. So, like, they're all throwing some headphones and, you know, just give us a couple different poses. So,
did they give you the backwards cap or was that your idea?
No, they basically, I mean, they had me, like, drinking a beer.
Oh,
they had me doing all different kinds of things. And they're just like, you know, we'll see everyone makes it.
Kevin,
did they get you to try one of those crazy tennis shoe lacings that all the kids are into these days?
No, I didn't have to do that. But
you got
to
get a handler.
I had to draw the line somewhere.
You need a man. You need somebody to protect you from this stuff.
It is
a mixed blessing, though, to be on the cover of Business Week.
Of course,
it?
I mean, I'm honored to be on the cover, but I mean, I was with the whole $60 million. This kid made $60 million. I didn't make anything. You know, the company while we have a path to becoming a profitable company, we are not a profitable company. You know, we're continuing to work on that with Federated Media and some other companies that we're signed up with to serve ads on the page. And
go Federated Media.
What's that?
This is John Battelle's company. They sell banner ads, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Go Federated Media.
And why do you say that, Corey?
Well, because that's where Boing Boing gets its money, too.
Oh, all right. Good. Yeah. Is Boing Boing all Federated Media? You don't have anybody else on there?
Yeah. Well, no. So it's a little complex because John's also personally our business manager. So I think he occasionally does deals on our behalf with entities other than Federated Media, but it's pretty much all Federated Media.
Battelle was a journalist.
Yeah. Well, and an entrepreneur. He founded the Industry Standard.
It's kind of an interesting thing, though. Now he's selling.
Kevin, did you prefer the alternate cover that got posted?
What was the alternate?
Ah, yes. You mean the 40-year-old virgin one?
Yeah.
The comparison? Striped shirt. It was awesome.
Wait a minute. Where's that? I didn't see that. Was that on Dig?
Yeah, there's like a bunch of different alternatives out there, which are just amazing. They're really cool. A bunch of people with Photoshop.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think in some ways this kind of attention is a bad thing for a company because it puts pressure on you. Of course, a lot of weasels come out of the woodwork saying, "Hey, kid, I can hunt for you with that $60 million."
It was actually the day it was posted. I had someone from Goldman Sachs email me like, "Hey, if you need money management," I'm like, "I can't even afford a couch. I just moved into my new apartment. Leave me alone. Like, this is I don't have $60 million."
Oh, I'm sure it's going to be an avalanche at some point of stuff.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Bugging you. Well, you know, after listening to that, it reminds me really that there are so many moments. There's quite a few that are missing from that. But it's great to hear those. And I thank Joe Kelly for putting that together at JK Software. They did a great job. And maybe we'll just have to do another one with some of the other great moments. Your nominations are appreciated. Thank you so much for all of your support. And another 75 twits ahead, at least.
Yeah.
I'm Leo Laporte, and it's just time for me to say another twit is in the can. Take care.
All right. I should have paid attention. I don't know what I'm going to do. Too much work. The problem is, there's no limit. My server's completely collapsed. So here's the deal. I'm just trying to get the thing up, but I have a hell of a time. What blue screens? Like, forget it. I'm killing you.
Round the horn.
Firewall.
Round the horn. Doing the twit.
Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby.
No spam at all.